Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull talked up high-speed rail this week, hinting at a large-scale infrastructure plan that could include new funding for a network between Brisbane, Sydney and Melbourne. He's planning to release an infrastructure and cities policy ahead of the election, and it's widely expected infrastructure funding will form part of the government's innovation agenda for the federal budget. Turnbull floated the idea of using a form of tax to fund the rail called value capture.
That's how railways were financed in the 19th century, actually. It's not actually a radical new plan at all. It's actually a sensible old plan that's been forgotten.
But what exactly is value capture?
I have no idea. What is it? Value capture?
If we do this, we're capturing a whole lot of value that otherwise we hadn't recognised.
Value capture? I don't have any idea of this.
I have no idea. I don't know what else to say. I feel real bad, but yeah, I have no idea.
Value capture, the picture or something like that. That's like when you are taking some pictures or something.
There you go. That's just some of the views of the public of what value capture is. To clear up some of the confusion about the term, I caught up with Vince Mangione, Associate Professor in Property Economics and Development at UTS Sydney.
Value capture is the concept of capturing and taxing the uplift in value in land resulting from changes in planning and or the provision of critical infrastructure, of which, you know, very fast trains and transportation would comprise. So in its simplest form, that's what value capture is. So as a result of the rezoning and uplifting in value, value capture basically works by taking a portion of that uplift and taxing it and returning that to government for critical infrastructure such as a very fast train.
So it's almost like a road toll when, for example, a new road has been built. The car users that get the benefit of that by using that road, they pay a toll. In this case, the landholders whose land value might increase because now there's fast rail going through it would essentially have to pay more tax.
That's right. Rather than the tax being imposed as you use, and it depends on how it's rolled out and applied, it may well be a tax in advance on the landholder, which creates a greater incentive for them to release the land or subdivide it and make it available. So it does have some advantages. Imposing it up front to stimulate land to be brought onto the market that would ordinarily be withheld or land banked.
Now, why would we use a process like that as opposed to pulling money out of general revenue or funding it through something like an increase in the GST, which would bring more money into the coffers?
Well, there's no silver bullet to tax reform, and I think that this is what government's currently wrestling with at the moment, as to how do you go about reforming the tax system. Australia is one of the lowest tax countries in the OECD. We're ranked about 30 out of 34, and we do need to do something about it. But it takes a brave politician to go to the public, particularly in an election year, and state that that's what we need to do. But basically, we do need to raise more revenue. You can only cut back programs so much. You can only instill so much into user pay philosophy. And at some point, you need to be able to provide services to the community, which includes infrastructure. And that simply comes by imposing higher taxes off a low tax base that we currently have. So I don't think there's anything wrong with simply coming out to the public and saying we are a low tax country. Some of the issues instilled in the fact that our tax mix is probably not as well balanced as other countries. We have a higher form of income tax in the OECD, but we have lower consumption tax. Our GST is one of the lowest taxes in the OECD, so there is room to move the GST, and that's a debate that we need to have. But similarly, our recurrent land taxes and our taxes on land, which is effectively what a value capture tax is, are also low. They're about half of what they should be. So it comes down to a matter of how do you slice and dice and introduce the increase in revenue that we need from this source as well. And value capture is just one of those ways. But it should not be simply achieved through a value capture tax. There are other ways in which we could achieve that objective.
Are there risks in both a value capture approach and even a land tax increase approach in pushing land prices up and therefore property prices up when the market's already pretty hot?
Well, I think if you take into account housing affordability, you can't always pass that on to the consumer or the property purchaser. They can only pay a certain price, and you know we're pretty close to reaching that level from an affordability perspective. So effectively what happens is, in economics, it passes back to the underlying landholder or the developer, if they are both the landowner and developer. So they end up paying part of that. They become the tax collection agency on behalf of the government in a value capture scenario. There are some risks attached to it because, you know, developers have to work along the lines of ensuring that they release land in a timely manner, that they can achieve their required profit margin. They are in business. It's not a bottomless pit for developers. They take on considerable risk. So it's very important that the incentive is not removed by overtaxing the developer in that way. And similarly, there is capacity for value capture currently exists in Australia through the council rating and land tax system. It's an incremental betterment tax. It's levied every year. Council rates are levied on about 98% of all property in Australia. And state land tax is imposed on about 15% of all property in Australia. So there is capacity to increase that tax as well.
So as part of the problem here, the fact that these kinds of nation-building projects go across state boundaries and we have councils, local government collecting some taxes, states collecting some taxes, and then the federal government collecting some taxes and then not working together on those projects?
Well, I use the analogy that when you look at local government, state and Commonwealth government, when it comes to tax, they're as competitive as Woolworths versus Coles. Regardless of whether they're on the same political side of the fence, there is a lot of competition when you have different tiers and layers of government competing for the same tax base. And so there's a lot of work to be done in reforming subnational government in particular, but also the relations between state and Commonwealth government. Because the state governments in Australia only collect about 14% of all tax revenue. Local government collects about 3%. But the Commonwealth collects over 80% if you include the GST, because that's a general purpose grant in which they have capacity to redistribute that revenue to the states the way they see fit. So one of the biggest problems we have in Australia is what's known as fiscal federalism and the imbalance between the tiers of government. And also we have the same tax base being competed with by different tiers of government. And we have the book that I've just released, Land Tax in Australia, The Fiscal Reform of Subnational Government, points out that we're one of the very few countries in which a recurrent land tax is imposed by state and local government. It's old hat, it's reached its use-by date, and we need to move on and divest this tax to local government as the tax collection agency. That revenue needs to be streamed up to the state so they can undertake critical infrastructure. The states themselves are unable to impose a state land tax. It won't work, it won't fly. The way they do it internationally is to have local government collect it through the rating system and to stream that revenue up to the states. That's a far more efficient way rather than paying for two sets of tax administration at the state government level, which imposes it on such a small tax base, and at the local government level. It's madness.
Okay, Malcolm Turnbull says that value capture is a sensible old plan. It's not a new idea. He says it's a sensible old plan that's been forgotten. Could value capture actually raise enough revenue to make fast rail possible?
Well, it's difficult to say until we know how much is required and what the projects are and what's earmarked over the next 10 or 20 years. I certainly believe that it would make a very valuable contribution. It's one that should be included in the tax mix. The short answer to that is yes, it is a very worthy and important prospective tax. At this stage, it's a conceptual tax, so it's largely a land value tax, so it sits under the umbrella of land tax. But the devil's always in the detail when you're bringing in, you know, or reforming or bringing in a new tax. And that's really where we have to work through this and say, look, how are we going to impose it? Who's going to be paying for it? Who's going to be collecting it? And how are we going to administer it? And that's where tax reform usually breaks down. And it's important that we get that ironed out very quickly and that all sides of politics work collectively and collegially in reforming this. It doesn't matter who's in government. One day the other side might be in, or whoever is in needs to ensure that they've got the correct tax revenue to run the country. And that's not happening at the moment. We've got short-sighted politics of, you know, anyone who wants to make a tax reform seems to be sniped at by the other side. And that's, we really need to put that aside. And we need to educate and get the media on side as well in ensuring that they work positively with tax reform and not sell it as some kind of voodoo. So we do need tax reform and we do need more revenue.
What difference could fast rail make to our economy?
Well, it could make quite a bit of difference if people can get to work and particularly in greenfield areas. It could be a lot of advantage for people being able to travel into the business hubs. If we can get people in and out of the business hubs, that makes transportation and the inclination for people to work and for business to set up in these business hubs far more attractive and far more efficient for people to be spending less time on the roads and even less time on the trains, because if you've got a VFT, then you effectively can maybe halve the time that you would travel through a normal train system. So I think it ticks most of the boxes to have VFT. We're going to need VFT regardless of whether we like it or not. So it's not an option, it's actually an essential.
Vince Mangione, Associate Professor in Property Economics and Development at UTS Sydney.